From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made last week when the city of Rochester implemented a so-called dynamic staffing plan for the city's fire department. The plan allows the fire chief to temporarily close firehouses during select shifts due to low staffing, with on-duty firefighters being moved to different fire stations. The goal is to reduce overtime costs. As a result of the policy, the city could save $1.3 million each year. But critics of the plan, who refer to the closures as brownouts, say they fear the policy puts public safety at risk. If a neighborhood firehouse is closed and the next nearest fire crew is dispatched, the response time will be longer and could make the other geographic areas more vulnerable, they say. Now, members of Rochester City Council say they too are concerned about the policy. Prior to the recent budget vote in which dynamic staffing policy was included, all nine members signed a letter written to Mayor Lovely Warren asking her to provide alternatives for them to consider. The letter reads in part, quote, "The council understands the fiscal challenges that our city faces, but we feel the dynamic staffing model is not the right choice for the fire department nor our community," end quote. The Rochester Firefighters Union is against the policy. In a statement, President Eddie Santiago called dynamic staffing, quote, "an obvious failure to make public safety a priority," end quote. Mayor Lovely Warren has referred to the union's comments as fear-mongering. This hour, we explore the dynamic staffing policy, its potential impact, and the concerns on each side of the issue. I'd like to welcome our guest for the hour. For a little while longer, still a member of Rochester City Council, it's Molly Clifford. Welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Evan.
And also with us is Jonathan Hardin, chair of Many Neighbors Building Neighborhoods and president of the Shalott Community Association. Jonathan, welcome back to you.
Thank you, Evan.
We invited representatives from the City of Rochester and the Rochester Fire Department to participate in this discussion, but they declined. Mayor Lovely Warren does not come on this program, and I'm disappointed about that, but I hope to change that as soon as I possibly can. And members of her administration are asked not to appear on Connections. But we do have some sound with the mayor to play for you coming up to kind of get her perspective on this, because I do want to include the mayor's perspective. It's important on this. And in fact, she has, as I mentioned in the introduction, she's called some of the concerns fear-mongering. So let me ask our guests in studio first how they view what's actually happening. I'll start with Councilmember Clifford. Go ahead.
So, obviously this was a cost-cutting measure that was part of the 2019-2020 proposed budget. You know, I think you pointed out correctly that it is a proposal that had all of our council members concerned about the potential effects of it. It comes out of a study that was done by Fitch and Associates that the city funded, looking at the fire department as a whole to kind of get a read on how we were doing staffing-wise and with its effectiveness. The report was glowing about the Rochester Fire Department, and I think everyone can say we should be very proud of our fire department. They are tremendous firefighters. They are so committed to keeping this community safe. They did propose a couple of different alternatives should the city want to consider some kind of different form or different funding of the fire department. But there was no need to take any step there at all. So the administration did propose this as a cost-cutting measure, this dynamic staffing model, which browns out a firehouse at night and on the weekends if people call in sick. Council was under the impression, and I think it was rightly so, the way it was presented by the administration, that this would be something that the fire chief would choose to do at his discretion. That if too many firefighters called in sick, it was a very quiet night, it would be a case-by-case basis. We found out on July 1st, when the budget year began, that in fact there was a schedule, and that the fire engines, depending on which one was up which night, were pretty much going to be browned out every night, almost regardless. So a lot of upset there, and that's kind of where we are at the moment.
Okay, so Councilmember Clifford, why don't you tell me, kind of draw the basic bottom line for us, the concern, your biggest concern. Let's get beyond budgets, let's get beyond the money and the schedules. The biggest concern is what?
The biggest concern is that there is a perception on the part of the public that when you brown out a firehouse, there is going to be a longer response time should there be an emergency in your neighborhood. And I think that is a well-founded fear. I think that, that's the bottom line, is that people feel less safe.
Okay. And Is there recourse for city council?
So, you know, we deal with a strong mayor form of government. So the way our city government works is that the mayor generally proposes legislation and we act upon it and we serve as oversight. There is a committee process. We have a public safety committee. We could propose an amendment to the budget through the committee process. And with five votes, we could change the way the fire department operates. We would have to, you know, come up with the money to offset the cost from somewhere. You know, that would be covered in the legislation. So that is what could happen. It has very rarely been done, but that is what could happen.
It still could happen. Mm-hmm. And even though that's rarely something that's been done, is this the kind of issue that you think might lead to that kind of an amendment?
I think it could. I know that there, again, is concern on the part of all council members. I think that some council members are giving the mayor and the fire chief the benefit of the doubt to say, you know, the fire chief knows what he's doing and they have his or he has their confidence. And so, you know, they'll take a wait and see approach. So I think that's where we are at the moment.
And Molly, when it comes to council's decision to go ahead and pass this budget, you know, I think some listeners might say, well, why did you pass it if this was going to happen? It sounds to me, and tell me if I'm interpreting this correctly, that your understanding of dynamic staffing was that it was going to be, you know, much less frequent and much less built into a regular schedule than it actually is in operation. Is that fair?
That is fair. That's very fair. Now, myself, Elaine Spall, and Jackie Ortiz voted against the budget purely because of this dynamic staffing model, because quite frankly, we didn't have any other recourse by which to make our extreme displeasure with this proposal known. You know, we had sent the letter, that's great. The alternatives that the mayor proposed, quite frankly, we didn't believe were valid alternatives. So that's the form that we took in expressing our opposition.
Yeah, City Council's letter to the mayor that was sent on June 17th, signed by all members of council, does include a concern that that says the opposition to the dynamic staffing model has been clear from all quadrants of our city. You do agree with that? You think that?
Oh, absolutely. I think we have seen, you know, very widespread concern and in some cases almost panic from people who, whether they have families who have, you know, medical conditions where the fire department is nearly always first on scene, to people who, you know, live close to a firehouse that may be impacted by a brownout. So they are very concerned.
Do you think the mayor's administration properly communicated to the public, to council, to everyone in the city, what may be coming and why?
No, and I think that's very clear, and I wouldn't be surprised if they now know that. But really, it's a major change, and there's no reason that it should not have been communicated to the public in advance, asking for people's input and really communicating what the potential effects or lack of effects would be.
I want to stress again that we have invited Mayor Warren or someone from the administration, someone from the fire department to join us, and they have declined, as they tend to do. But we are going to play some extended remarks from Mayor Warren that WXXI's James Brown got for us yesterday in just a moment here. And I don't mean to sort of juxtapose the mayor versus Molly Clifford. This is not a one-on-one issue. City Council, all nine members have expressed concern about this issue. Molly happens to be the one in the room today. Let me turn to Jonathan Harden, the chair of Many Neighbors Building Neighborhoods and president of the Shalott Community Association. How do you see this issue?
We have many neighborhood associations from across the city that caucus with Many Neighbors Building Neighborhoods. And there was no communication, no public forums. We learned about this when the budget dropped and we started going through it and people were telling us that they were going to brown out the firehouses. Since then, we have heard from neighborhood associations and block clubs from across the city, residents. We've heard from members of our associations, firefighters personally, and through the fire union. And again, since we formed in 2016, we've been complaining about communication from the city, and this was a failure on their part to communicate this. And we also see this as a safety issue because we look at our firehouses as more than just putting out fires. They're working in the opioid epidemic that's currently happening, or they're safe houses for our residents. We have one of our neighborhood associations who just last month was in a store in her neighborhood, and a lady came in crying. She was being attacked by her partner, husband or boyfriend, and that member was able to carry them to the Wisconsin house. What if that Wisconsin house was not open and they didn't know that? Where would they know to go to the next house or where the next house was at? And so there are legitimate concerns throughout the city when it comes to the neighborhood associations. And also the firefighters' perspective is they have concerns about, they work with these individuals each and every day. They know their strengths and their weaknesses. If they're moved to a different house or they're working with a different company or they don't know the neighborhood, it's just a change for them, an added extra step that they have to go through when they're doing their daily job.
Let's listen to what the mayor said, and we'll ask both of our guests in studio to respond to some of what they're hearing. This is Mayor Lovely Warren speaking at length about this issue, about some of the criticisms of this issue. Let's listen.
And I think that it's a bunch of fear-mongering. You have a fire chief that have actually grown up through the ranks and became a fire chief who put this on a table because it has been something that has been going on in the city of Rochester for years, dynamic staffing. In the daytime, we take up to 4 companies out of service. And so it's not putting anyone's life at risk. And I think that you have a union that's trying to make this an issue and trying to get citizens riled up, and it's wrong. It's wrong because the information that is being shared is not accurate and it's not true. In the afternoon, if I schedule you for a shift, and if I'm sure any of you are scheduled for a shift, what do your employers expect you to do? To show up. And so if at any point in time we have a number of people that call in for a shift, and in the evening the chief makes a decision because of the fact that a number of people have called in, that's not putting people at risk. We have a report that explicitly states that we have overservice in our community and that we could actually close a company permanently, and that's not what we're doing. The other part about that is that the union has, we have offered the union an alternative that is totally within their control, 100% in their control. They have not accepted that alternative, and therefore, they have not come to the table with a solution. And so, at the end of the day, we have an obligation to the taxpayers of our city to submit a balanced budget. We did that. We have an obligation to the taxpayers of our city that when we schedule people or employees for a particular shift, that they actually show up. And we recognize that emergencies do happen. But sometimes when you have too many emergencies happen at the same time, you need to make a different decision. And to take one company out of service in the evening, when we take up to 4 companies out of service during the day, it doesn't impact response times. It doesn't, there's no evidence that points to that when we've been doing this for years. Go back and look at the data. There's no evidence that the union or anyone can point to that says that when we take cars or trucks out of service during the daytime, that it has impacted response time. It hasn't. And so it is not fair to this community. It's not fair to the firefighters that do a fantastic job of representing our city to put them in a position where they are feeling like we don't support them, because we do. This administration, and you go back to 2013, when we came into office, we have put more money in the fire department budget year after year. And in fact, this year, we added $600,000 to the fire department's budget. And so I'm trying to understand how we are putting them, in, or how the union can say that we have put them at risk and we have played a game with lives, when they know for a fact that that isn't true. And I would ask you, if they truly believed that that was true, why wouldn't they accept the proposal that the city put on the table that's 100% in their control right now? And I said it at the budget hearing, and I'm saying it today. If the union would come to the table, because it's something that we have to negotiate. Today, we would amend the budget to not do dynamic staffing, which we have been doing for decades during the daytime, at night. And that is solely within their control. Today, Eddie Santiago, if he wanted to, can accept that proposal, and he has yet to do so.
That's Rochester Mayor Lovely Warren speaking. Yesterday, reporter James Brown for WXXI bringing us that sound. And so those are some of her remarks, and let's kind of hit some of these one by one. Let's start with this. The mayor says that dynamic staffing has been in place for decades during the daytime, and that's when there are more calls for service anyway. We're talking about dynamic staffing at night. Council Member Clifford, what do you think?
Well, I think that there's a couple of things here. One is that while more fires and emergency responses happen during the day, more fatal fires happen at night. And that is quite frankly because we know that while people have the best of intentions with smoke detectors, often they don't have batteries or they don't have detectors at all, and people die in fires because they wake up and their house is on fire and they may not know how to get out, or they may not wake up because they don't have a smoke detector. So that's the evidence, that is the case. Most fatal fires happen at night. The dynamic staffing during the daytime, good example, except with the Thurston Road fire a few months ago, there were companies that were out of service training. They called them back in to help with that fire. So you can always bring an out-of-service company back in to work. You can't bring people from home back in to start a shift because you have a big fire. So I think it's a, completely different. It's not an apples-to-apples comparison.
She says it's fear-mongering. I want to ask both of you if you think there has been any kind of the public conversation that is fairly described as fear-mongering. Councilmember Clifford?
I do think that fires, medical emergencies, are frightening incidents that happen. People are afraid of them happening to them. That is human nature. So I don't think it's fear-mongering to say, hey, there is an increased risk here.
Okay.
That's
Jonathan,
the stated fact.
What do you think?
I don't think so. We've had more neighborhood associations and more residents reach out to us over social media since this started than we've had since we started in 2016. And we definitely believe that seconds, much less minutes, can mean the difference between life and death in our communities for our firefighters and our residents. And if that house is a couple streets over and it's closed, you cannot tell us it's not going to increase the time that the fire truck is going to have to come from the next house over. It's going to increase those times.
So this is where I have to say, I mean, I have no expertise whatsoever, and I know the mayor keeps referring to a report on response times. Let's talk a little bit about that, because let's just do a little thought experiment. Let's say in the city of Rochester, which is, what's the population, 200,000 plus, something like that, Molly?
Yeah, 208.
Okay, 208,000 people. Let's say there were a million firefighters, which makes no sense, but let's just say for years we've had a million firefighters, and we were going to reduce that number to 900,000, 10% reduction. There would be no change in response time. There'd be more than enough firefighters to cover that much space and that many people if you were overstaffed in that way. What the mayor is basically saying is, right now, based on the current level of staffing, based on what the dynamic staffing is going to do, and based on this report, response times are similarly not going to be impacted, that we're just not at a level that we're going to see a change in response times. What do you think?
I think that is very difficult to prove. I think that she is talking about overall response time across the city. I think if you look at where the actual fires occur and you look at the response time within those districts with the resources that are available, that response times will increase. It's the way that you look at data, but I don't think there's any way that response times would not be impacted.
Do we have a good way, a reliable way, to get an idea in the next month or 3 months or 6 months whether response times have changed? Would we track it pretty well?
I think we track it pretty well.
So we should be able to know.
We should.
Okay, on this. And Jonathan, what do you say about that? Because this has been one of your chief concerns here. But what the mayor is saying to you is, look, I know what you've heard, but nothing we're doing is going to impact response times.
The other night when we had the community meeting at Lyle Library, we had direct questions for the deputy mayor. And some of those questions he couldn't answer without asking the union representatives what firehouse was closed that night. So I think if you're going to send someone to give us information and to talk with us about that, they should at least know what firehouse is closed that night. And they should be able to tell us other things like the response time or how those response times are tracked compared to just talking points. We wanted the chief of the fire department there. And it's my understanding that he is going to come to our next Many Neighbors Building Neighborhoods monthly meeting. But we wanted someone that can go into detail on these questions and concerns that we have, because we hear the talking points. We hear the talking points from the city. We hear the talking points from the fire union. We want to hear the facts. What are the details? And how is this going to affect our city?
So when you say talking points, Jonathan, you're talking about Deputy Mayor Jim Smith, I assume. Is that right?
Yes.
He was there. Do you feel like he or the city is listening to you, truly listening?
I don't think so, to be quite frank. If they were listening to us, they would know that we need to go to the neighborhoods and we need to speak with them about what is dynamic staffing, what is browning out a firehouse, because a lot of those terms we've had to give out to our neighborhood associations and explain what it is, because they didn't know what it was. It was just a shock of, this is going to happen, it takes effect July 1st, and there's no recourse besides the three council people that voted against it. And we went to the budget hearings and pleaded with the city council members to not vote for this. So we're asking those six members who voted for this to find a solution, because they've helped create this problem.
Again, listeners, we had hoped to have someone from the mayor's office or administration, the fire department, and they all declined our request for joining this conversation this hour. But we'd like to hear from you as we talk about what the critics and those concerned about this issue called the browning out of fire stations during various shifts, what the city calls dynamic staffing. It's 844-295-TALK. That's toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Let me read a comment from a listener, which dovetails a little bit with what the mayor had to say. Misty writes to us on Twitter saying, listening to Connections about the mayor's decision to brown out the fire departments, she is talking fear-mongering and blaming the union. No, she is to blame for not communicating, again, with the people. She can reduce the budget in other ways. So let's talk about the budget, because what the mayor said in that section of remarks that we played, about 4 minutes or so, what the mayor said was she has a responsibility to taxpayers to balance the budget and did so. Now, she's also saying she's not going to just balance the budget and reduce public safety, but she's saying we're talking more than $1 million here. And if Eddie Santiago or members of council or anybody else wants to come up with alternatives, solutions for balancing the budget, she's all ears. Let's talk about it. So, Councilmember Clifford, you didn't vote for the budget. You're concerned about this staffing plan. What's an alternative? What can we do?
Well, you know, it's a very large budget with multiple departments involved. There could be any number of ways to balance this budget. And quite frankly, whenever we have had issues before in budgets last year, it was the crime prevention officers at some of the neighborhood service centers. There have been alternatives developed. Quite frankly, the mayor's responsible for the day-to-day operation of the city. There are uncountable alternatives that could be presented to us. So we also, one of the things that council did suggest is that we cover the funding through our contingency budget for this year. So dynamic staffing would not take place this year while the fire department, the administration, community representatives, whatever, find a longer term solution that would solve the problem in the long term.
We're talking more than $1 million, 1.3 or so, but how big is the city budget annually?
I was afraid you were going to ask me that question. Hundreds of millions.
Hundreds of millions of dollars. Okay, so just over $1 million. And what you're saying is there must be somewhere that you can come up with more than $1 million.
Absolutely. I mean, she talked about the fact that she increased the fire department budget by $600,000 by adding a lieutenant and a clerical staff person. They've been operating without those two positions so far. So you could get $600,000 right there by not doing that. That would be one option that would get you halfway there.
Jonathan, do you have sympathy for when the mayor says, look, I've got a responsibility to taxpayers. We're not trying to jeopardize public safety, But if you've got an alternative, let's hear it, because balancing a budget is something that's got to be a priority.
And we told council when we went and spoke with them that if you're going to cut something, we would not want you to cut things like our fire department, our police department, or the essentials that we need to run the city. If there's going to be projects that we have to delay or put off to save that $1 million, less than, I think, 1% of the budget, then we're asking that you seek those alternatives.
All right. So Adam writes to us to say, how many public hearings were there on this issue? So we'll talk about that on the other side of the spectrum. Let's take our early break of the hour. We'll answer Adam's question, and we'll answer more of your feedback as we talk about dynamic staffing, what's going on in the city of Rochester, more analysis of what the mayor is saying is the actual set of facts that she thinks the public is misunderstanding as we talk about safety, firefighters, and who's ready if you need to call them. That's next on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, American malls are dying. And Andrew Yang, a presidential candidate, says the government better have a plan for what to do with the buildings and the massive parking lots that surround them. He points out that there are hundreds of malls that could close in the next few years alone. And we're talking about lots of space and lots of blight. But should the government step in, and can malls be saved? We'll talk about it next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. So Adam wants to know, how many community forums or public hearings were there on this issue? Councilmember Clifford.
There was one public hearing on the budget overall.
On the budget overall?
Yeah.
Not on the subject of fire department staffing?
Zero.
Should there have been? I mean, is this the kind of issue that rises to that level?
You know, Evan, I don't know if others do. I used to work for the Rochester Fire Department. When we had major changes in the community, we may not have had hearings, but we went out to community groups and told them what we were planning to do before we ever did it.
So, you know, it's interesting. I mean, your history doing that kind of work here. What did you learn about the way the community responds and feels about public safety? And I ask that not to sort of just tee up a softball, but because, again, this is an issue where the mayor feels like people are misunderstanding the facts. What did you learn in that role?
Well, I think I learned very early on growing up here in Rochester that people really care about their neighborhoods. They care about what goes on. They care about public safety. It's a part of their everyday lives. You know, I grew up in a family of public service where the public needed to be a part of whatever services you were providing. So, you know, kind of second nature, I guess, to me. But nothing I have ever been involved with has disproved that theory.
Jonathan, when it comes to what you want to see the city do next, let's talk about what happens going forward here. Because the mayor is essentially challenging Eddie Santiago, the Firefighters Union, to kind of come up with alternatives, come back to the table. And she is calling out what she sees as fear-mongering. What do you want to see happen next?
Number one is communication between all of the neighborhood associations. There are a lot of us that feel shut out or left out of the conversation, and we want to be a part of that conversation. When we first learned of this and we started opening up all of our meetings across the city for the firefighters union to come in and talk to us, there was tons of people coming to those meetings asking questions and learning about this at that time. There should have been public hearings about this for the community to come express their concerns. The first thing you hear from a lot of the members of our associations is respect for the firefighters and respect for the police officers or the CPOs that are in our communities. They know their names. They know who they are. They care about them, and they know that we rely on them for public safety.
But, you know, in this case, though, Jonathan, you said that when the deputy mayor, Jim Smith, came to talk to you. And when was this?
This was Tuesday night.
Okay. So,
Monday night, I'm sorry.
So Monday night. You said that he wasn't even aware of the current staffing arrangements in individual stations, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Jim Smith, not to channel Jim Smith, which I will not attempt to do, but he might say, look, I respect, as the mayor has said, the leader of the department who knows this community, grew up here, came through the ranks, and we are trusting the expertise. So I may not be able to tell you where every single firefighter out of dozens or hundreds is currently working, but the chief certainly does, and we respect that, and we work in tandem, and we give a lot of deference to the authority and the expertise there.
But it doesn't build the confidence of the people that were in the room when they ask questions and you don't know. Or if you give you an example, someone said, is Engine 5 going to be closed? And he was like, it's not going to, not on the closure list. It was actually on the calendar to be closed the week of the 22nd of this month. And so kind of had to push back and correct that. If you slip up on little things like that when you're in his position, then you're going to lose the room and you're going to lose them as far as trusting you because they don't think you have all of the facts. If you only come to talk to us about your talking points.
Well, that's the last time I'll try to channel Jim Smith. And Jim, if I'm wrong about what you might say in response to that, please call or come on the program. You're more than welcome. We're talking this hour about the issue of firefighters, fire safety, and the kind of services currently scheduled staffed in Rochester. There's a controversy right now with Mayor Lovely Warren's administration putting forward a plan that they call dynamic staffing, which happens at night. And the mayor says happens at night based on firefighter attendance. The critics have pointed out this has resulted in the temporary shutdown of certain stations where residents might not be aware that those stations are closed, and they're concerned that that could leave people more vulnerable. You just heard Jonathan Harden, the chair of Many Neighbors Building Neighborhoods and president of the Shalott Community Association. Molly Clifford is here, a member of Rochester City Council. All nine members of City Council signed a letter together to the mayor last month asking airing their concerns about this, and even bring up the idea of contingency funding. Let's hit this again just kind of so people understand before I get to some more feedback from listeners on this issue. Molly, if you end up going to something like contingency funding, how does that work? What is really in play as a mechanism or an option for you here?
The city has a contingency fund for unplanned events.
A rainy day fund?
Essentially, yes. And it's used for all kinds of things. So it would not be, you know, beyond the realm that it could be used for something like this.
Okay. How often have we seen that kind of a fund used?
It gets used every year for a variety of things, and council has generally approved uses of the contingency fund, so it's absolutely doable.
I am not going to read the most of the snarky feedback. There is a wide range of feedback that I'm starting to see, but let me read this from Chris, who says, Evan, generally I'm not a fan of the mayor, but I got to say I'm sympathetic to her right now. No one wants to lose public services that protect safety. But no one wants to increase taxes either. She came up with a plan. If people don't like that plan, why not provide an alternative plan? Seems like the union is just saying, we don't like this, don't do it, rather than saying, here's what we could do to help. What do you think, Molly?
You know, I have not been a part of the meetings there. I do know that the alternatives that were presented by the administration to the union, in my mind, were really not viable alternatives because they required the approval of other bodies. So one was some changes to funding of the employee health plan, which would have required all five unions to sign on, which, you know, God bless the city unions, but they have their own issues that they have to deal with the administration on. I don't think that they're in a place to say, okay, firefighters, sorry, you have this problem. We're going to help you out here. One use of the 2% fund, which is a sort of legal quagmire, can only be used for certain purposes. This one would not be one of them. And to me, I guess the other one was the protectives drivers. And we have the oldest protectives unit, which is largely made up of volunteers who assist our fire department. And to essentially get rid of the firefighters who serve as protective drivers. So none of those alternatives to me are viable.
Yeah, and I'll just say this to Chris. I appreciate the remarks there. Just to sort of take up a little bit for firefighters. I understand the tenor of your remarks. I'm not sure it's fair to say that it's up to the firefighters to tell the mayor what to do. I mean, they're firefighters. They're not budgeters. And if someone comes to them and says, well, we're going to cut from your department, and their assessment is this puts people at risk, they probably are going to air their concerns that they don't want that. Now, maybe you think, well, that's just what any union would say. But maybe you think, well, as you said, Chris, well, they ought to come up with a solution. I just don't know that that's the firefighter's job to do that. Now, maybe that is city council's job, or maybe that's someone else's job, though, as Molly describes, city council is more about oversight, but maybe we'll see more of these kinds of discussions. Do you suspect in the coming days we'll see public hearings or public forums about this? Are they happening sort of organically? I mean, what's going on?
I definitely know that my colleagues continue to be concerned. I know that there is a meeting scheduled with the fire chief to talk in more detail about the model and how it is working. So there will be continued discussion for sure.
Okay. What do you expect to happen, Jonathan?
We would definitely welcome any of those public forums, but we're also asking all of our members to go to the next Speak to Council at 6:30 on next Tuesday and voice their concerns about this. I see it as the vast majority of our public and our communities are against this, so I don't know why you wouldn't have public forums to answer questions that has the fire chief there.
Well, let me continue to read your emails and I'll take some of your phone calls as well. Michael says, will the mayor be cutting police officers? She keeps telling us crime is down in spite of the daily shootings in the city. The fire chief serves as the mayor's choice. I don't know that there is any talk about cutting police officers, Councilmember Clifford?
No.
That was quick. would that surprise you if the mayor put forward a plan to cut police officers?
That would surprise me, yes.
I think Michael is just sort of saying, look, if the mayor says crime's down, shouldn't you also cut police officers? I mean, I don't know how serious you are about that, Michael, but I don't see anyone putting forward that as any sort of a proposal. Let me get some of your phone calls. Carlene in Rochester first up. Go ahead, Carlene.
Yes, definitely this needs to be revisited. But one of the things that came to mind when the girl called and said, what if you had an emergency and you didn't know the station was closed? Why can't we have a simple light system on the exterior of the station? Red, green, red, whatever, yellow, that indicates that the station is open or not open. And I'm not saying this is after the problem has been resolved, but we should have something so that a person would know that they're not coming to a station which is there's no one there and no one can help them. I mean, just a simple thing like you do for a deaf population.
Sure.
Okay?
Yeah, Carlene, so thank you. So even if you take Carlene's idea, sort of putting lights out or some sort of notification, is there going to be any kind of regular notification so people realize, okay, just for X amount of hours or whatever the case may be, this station may be closed down?
I think that's one of the questions we have for the chief. But to my knowledge, right now there's no formal communication at all. There was a flyer posted at the door of Monroe Avenue the first week of closure with instructions to call the pull box, and that is an immediate response, but it's obviously not a body there.
Okay. Jonathan, what do you think of that?
My understanding is besides the calendar that the Democrat and Chronicles reported, there is no notice. Or if they're going to close it on a holiday, like they did not close it for the 4th of July. Well, it was on the calendar, so we don't know are those decisions made daily? Will they notify the public with a robocall to that community on the daily basis? What will happen so the public will know that their firehouse is closed?
All right. Jim in Rochester next on the phone. Go ahead, Jim.
Hi. Hello, everyone. I have a bunch of questions, and I kind of wrote them out in an outline form. The first question would be, is it possible to unify the city with the towns, similar to some park services? The next question is, which would then transfer the budget issue over to the county and take it out of the city's hands. Is the city owed any money from either the state, the federal, or county services towards our fire department? Because they're usually, the state, usually late with our school money, which is one of the reasons why the school is usually running at a deficit. The next one, are there similar programs to the 9/11 programs that were set up for the police officers, like SWAT stuff, that our city might qualify for, whether it was either training money or any other kind of special services? The other one, is it possible, kind of how we ran those auctions with the horses and stuff, to possibly do an art auction to raise money that could go into a fund that would then generate an interest revenue that could then be used for these shortfalls?
All right, Jim, thank you. So let's hit him one by one. He's asking about unifying city and town services. Consolidation is the word there. That's usually politically a winner. Molly Clifford, what do you think?
Yeah, that is a tough one. And quite frankly, the Rochester Fire Department now provides service to West Brighton, which it has been doing for, I don't know, 6 or 7 years. And I think that case is still in court. So it is not something that is particularly popular, particularly with volunteer fire companies.
I didn't mean to be snarky, other than just to say, when consolidation comes up as an issue at all, there tends to be a lot of political hurdles to begin with there.
Absolutely.
Is that anything that's viable right now with this?
I think it would be a very long-term, very difficult discussion because as people like their local schools, they all like their local fire departments.
He's asking if the city is owed money from the state or other entities, perhaps that could be used for fire services, because of general late payment of aid, et cetera. Not that I know
of. I don't think that's an issue. We do get some funding from the state for training and for capital equipment, and it probably is late, but it's not something that we could count on for these purposes.
He raised the question on 9/11 type programs kind of provide funding. I'm not sure exactly what he was talking about there. Were you?
I was not clear on that.
Okay, Jonathan, you? No?
No.
And he's also just talking about, you know, sort of various ways to raise money to sort of fund whatever it would take to bring back the firefighters in this case. What do you think?
I just think it's kind of a sad commentary if we can't, as part of our tax base, pay for an essential public service.
If you have to have lemonade sales to fund the
firefighters. Some other things maybe, but not the fire department.
I think all of those solutions mentioned would be some long-term issue to work out. And we have a short-term problem, and that short-term problem is tonight at 6 p.m. another firehouse will be closed. And that's going to happen every day for the foreseeable future, and that's our issue.
Before I get back to the phones, just making sure we square up whether what Jonathan just said is true. And I'm just kind of sorting through what the mayor said vis-a-vis what other stakeholders have said. This comes from City Hall on their 5 facts about the Rochester Fire Department's dynamic staffing. Number 3, dynamic staffing at night will only occur based on firefighter attendance, and I'll quote from their sheet. The fire chief will only utilize dynamic staffing at night due to vacancies caused by unscheduled absences, including people calling in sick. If there are no unscheduled absences for the night shift, dynamic staffing is not necessary, end quote. So that would challenge the assertion you just made, Jonathan.
Well, that's why we asked, why was this calendar created through September? Was it just so that these are the houses that are going to close if someone calls out sick? And how will we know if someone called out sick that night?
Okay.
Yeah. God forbid, don't get sick in the Rochester Fire Department. We don't.
And they have the best rate of individuals for any department in the city as far as not calling out sick.
Okay. But Molly, what the mayor is saying there is you can't just say that things are going to be closed. There won't be closures unless it's necessary. That's what her sheet says.
I will say that we very much thought it was going to be an opt-in policy. It really strikes us as an opt-out policy right now, that with a schedule, with a large department, it is likely that a person or two is going to get sick and call in, God forbid, and that will trigger a brownout. That's unacceptable.
Okay. Robert in Fairport next on the phone. Go ahead, Robert.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. The amount of money you're talking about here is roughly the amount of money that I'm hearing that the mayor wants to spend on the sports academy for that soccer stadium that's been empty for a couple of years or 3 years or 4 years, whatever. It's about priorities. I'm just kind of curious where the money comes from to double the, quote, investment in this soccer stadium that never should have been built in the first place versus actually doing something government's responsible for, which is fighting fires and making sure people that have heart attacks get responded to quickly.
Robert, thanks for the phone call. So he is looking at the dollars and cents of it after the mayor, among other people, are talking about what to do with the soccer stadium. Is that a fair question to raise, Councilmember Clifford?
It's a fair question to raise for sure. It's not the same kind of funding because obviously the Rochester Fire Department is operational funding. We need to find it every year for ongoing expense. Capital investment in the soccer stadium is a different type of funding. And, I totally get the point of view that we should cut all that stuff out. I do think, we want to live in a city that has a lot of different alternatives. We have a soccer stadium, whether we want to or not, it's there. We do make our choices, make our priorities for sure. But again, big government, big tax base, not a big tax base, but you know what I'm saying? It's a big enough budget we can find $1.2 million.
Okay. And by the way, since Robert brought up the stadium, and you're here, Councilmember Clifford, let me ask you. It's a problem to solve, and there's a lot of different ways you could go about it because that stadium is really not being used, and it is a big facility. You could let it go, figure out a way to bulldoze it and start over and declare it a loss, whatever that would cost. It is obviously costing a significant amount of money every year right now. I don't know exactly how much it's costing the city right now, but...
Yeah, it's in the neighborhood of $600,000, but I think this year's budget is in the neighborhood of $900,000.
Okay, so close to $1 million a year to really not use the stadium. And so the idea, whether it's the mayor or others who've proposed thoughts on what to do with it, is spend a little upfront with the idea of turning it back into something viable that can get a return on the investment. Do you support something like that happening?
Overall, I do, though I will say I'm very nervous about it. And again, it is part of my district. It is part of a neighborhood that has seen a lot of challenge, but also seen some good opportunity and turnaround. So I would love to see it get used and be a part of the community. I don't want to see us spend a lot of money doing something for which we have no proven track record.
You want to see a lot of community input go into this one?
I would love to.
Jonathan is nodding vigorously to that question.
Yes. That was the first thing that kept popping in my head is we need community input from the neighbors and from the communities around there and from our residents.
Back to the question on fire staffing. And here's a really good question from Chris, who writes the program and says, are there recognized standards for staffing and protection against which the mayor's plan and the fire union's opposition can be compared? Councilmember Clifford, do we know something about that?
So the Fitch report, which is the report that the mayor is basing this decision upon, is accessible to my understanding that it's on the city's website, though I think the last time I checked I couldn't find it. But I know that the deputy mayor said that it was available online. So there are standard models that the Fitch folks use to compare us against. And we are an accredited agency, and we have a high insurance rating, both of which we want to maintain. So that's definitely part of what we are sensitive to and aware of. But yes, there is a comparison there.
And I'll just kind of get at the frustration that I have, which I think is what Chris is sort of hinting at here, which is that when you've got a mayor and a fire union, who one side is claiming this is going to impact public safety, and the other says it won't impact public safety at all, and you've got response times that you can actually measure and standards to which, you know, you can measure, you know, what you have in terms of staffing and availability. I don't know why this becomes a political issue. It becomes very frustrating for the public to look at it and see that this is actually something you can measure. This isn't something all that subjective, I don't think. How many people do you have on staff? How long does it take you to get to a call? What does the standard say? Is acceptable? What's your average time for the last year? What's your goal target time? Can you get there with the current staffing? I don't understand why this becomes a political debate.
Well, you know, I think it goes back to fire and medical emergencies are things that people worry about and things that happen. I also think the problem is that you can't plan emergencies. So to say, would we be able to meet most of the need most of the time? Yes, absolutely we would. But there are likely to be events that we are not going to be able to respond to in what anyone would think would be an appropriate amount of time. And that's what scares people.
And I haven't had a chance since we met him here in studio during the primary election season to talk to Jose Pio, who's likely to succeed you in council now. Have you spoken to him? Is he largely in alignment with you on this?
Yes.
Okay, fair enough. So, I mean, so depending on how things go in November and assuming that that's the next member of council, we'll certainly talk to people like Jose Pio in the future on that. Down to our last minute or so. So let's conclude with this, Jonathan Harden. As the chair of Many Neighbors Building Neighborhoods, you've asked for communication. You did have a chance to talk to the deputy mayor on Monday night. You felt like it was largely talking points you got. What's going to improve this? Tell me what would build a bridge for you.
Communications, how it's going to happen each day, how we're going to, it's going to be notifying the public that this is going to brown out. But mainly, we don't want this. Every neighborhood association has talked with us, said find a way to not put into effect dynamic staffing. That's what we keep hearing. And so if it's 1.2 million or 1.3 million, find it somewhere. And that is your job, to find it in the budget when you see that the public does not want this.
Okay. And Councilmember Clifford, I will ask you, again, not to channel the mayor here, but the mayor says that a lot of the concerns that have been raised are not based in fact. If the data shows that response times are not impacted, is council going to be able to stand up and say, we were wrong, things are fine, let's continue as normal?
I think we're a ways from that. You know, I think we have to listen to the people we represent and what they think is of primary importance to us. We have to know that they trust the government to keep them safe.
Thank you both for being here. Molly Clifford is a member of Rochester City Council. And again, she's one of nine members. All nine signed a letter to the mayor last month expressing their concerns with this dynamic staffing plan. Councilmember Clifford, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And our thanks to Jonathan Harden, chair of Many Neighbors Building Neighborhoods and president of the Shalott Community Association. You'll often see him where the nicest flowers are planted in Shalott. And I know someone who lives up there. Nice to see you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
More connections coming up next.